We're talking with Dr. Brett Carver, a wheat breeder, of course, at Oklahoma State University. And Dr. Carver, let's talk a little bit about maybe, first of all, some of the varieties that you've got out in the public sector right now, how you felt some of them performed given these tough conditions we had here in the 2018 crop. What kind of stuck out in your mind as you watched some of the things that you've released?
A lot of varieties got bunched up. And when they get bunched up like that, it's really hard to know what did better. And if you try to tease out the differences, then you wonder, well, are you really, just splitting hairs over these numbers? And that's the feeling I come up with a lot of times when I look at the yields from this past year. It's what I call yield compression. The separation from top to bottom is so small that you don't really know if the top is that much better than the bottom. And when you have that many stresses combined into one year, that's what happens. A lot of that genetic potential just kind of goes down the sink.
And, of course, as you mentioned, the stresses were really nonstop, really most of the growing season, and that did tell, that did take its toll on overall wheat production as well as, when you start looking at the variety trials that you're watching.
Yeah, and the drought was bad enough. It was dry last year. But even with that drought, I was – pretty impressed with some of the potential that we were looking at in April. I thought, wow, we have the possibility for some 50 bushel wheat here pretty easy, and that's amazing considering how much dry weather we had. And sometimes it's just really a matter of getting the moisture, not a lot of moisture, but just at the right time and spread out when the crop really needs it. And where that happened, again, that potential was there, but what happened in April, we had some freezes, one right after the other, that took its toll. And I don't know which one it was, but I had the strongest feeling it was the last one that probably did the most damage, the latest one we had in April, because we've been through freezes. We've had freezes. We've got the germplasm that can adapt to that. But even the varieties we have that have done well in those freeze years, they suffered. You can see it. The Gallagher and Bentleys and all those.
So, when you think about all the problems that we had this last growing season, what does that tell you as a wheat breeder? In other words, what lessons did you pick up, or as you looked at the various varieties, as you looked at all the stresses, anything that you picked up that really is going to help you make those selections going forward?
Well, this particular set of events and environments, this environmental combination we had this year, makes me look for something that can, one, not start so fast. And we tend to select away from that anyway. We want to hold that winter dormancy as long as possible. For grazing, that really helps. Even if you're not grazing, it helps. But if you hold that dormancy off, you want to make sure that it finishes. And this year really has taught me to look for that genetic combination where it can hold the dormancy but also finish fast. We didn't have that kind of selection pressure from the freezes we had in, 16 would be the most recent, 13 before that, because we had some springs that allowed that crop to redevelop and finish kind of on a normal course. This was not a normal course this year. Things really got fast-tracked. So it's that set of environments, those conditions that we're really trying to take advantage of.
So you're wanting to see something that once it does break dormancy, that the clock ticks pretty quickly and gets you to that ripening and dead ripe stage.
And then the one variety that comes to mind in our own program that is not very good at that is Gallagher. It doesn't really hold its dormancy that long. It's one of the earlier breaking varieties. But even when it breaks, it just kind of takes a sweet time. And I think in this kind of under these conditions, that's not going to work too well.
Right. When we look at what's in the pipeline, you were talking about that with our wheat growers here today. What are the two or three things that are out there, the cultivars that you've got, that you are working with, that you've got some good data with? What's out there that sticks out in your mind?
Oh, first and foremost, not that we never emphasize quality, and that is not just test weight and protein, but the functionality of the protein, functionality of that dough. I'm really excited about what we have coming out of the program now. The only challenge I see is, okay, if we put this genetics out there, it's a little bit unusual. Do we have the capability of seeing that genetics go through the system, go through the grain channels where it can really be utilized? Now you got to start talking about, well, do we go outside of a commodity type market? And I think yes, but we have to have that system set up. Pieces are being put in place right now, and as long as those pieces come together, I think we have the genetics to service that kind of market. And that's very exciting to me, because now we're seeing the genetics really being taken advantage of that should be. So first and foremost is the quality we're seeing. It's a step above.
So you're wanting to try to identity to preserve those particular varieties, to be able to get them to segregate at the combine, to be able to get that premium, right?
Exactly. We see that happening a little bit with the Indigo system. I don't know that we need to go straight from farm to mill. That all has to be worked out beyond my purview. But, you know, just keeping the system like we have it now, you know, where we utilize our traditional elevators, but just hold back some of that bin space for some of these varieties that can do things that most varieties cannot do. I hope we come to that point, because, we do have the genetics now to service it.
So where are we on the potential of another variety or two being released in the next couple of years?
Well, we have to go through a formal process at the university, and that process involves submitting a proposal for release to a committee of scientists in Dasner, and that's the first step. And normally I do that back in February, but I wanted to see how this crop year turned out, thinking, well, I'd get the separation that I was looking for. No, we didn't get the separation. So now we have to rely on other things to help us sort things out. And that's why it's taking a little bit longer. I think by the end of this month, early September, we'll have a proposal ready to go. The university will make a decision. Announcements will be made. The seed has been produced. It's just a matter of, you know, putting a name on it, getting the marketing out there, and getting it in the field, which I think can happen.
And get it to those growers that will be growing the certified seed, right?
Exactly. Certified seed growers will have first tabs on it. And by the way, we do have names. We just can't announce them. So we're that far along. So we'll be there.
So stay tuned, in other words.
Stay tuned, exactly.
So, you know, what are the two or three things, in other words, maybe the holes or the improvements that you've seen from the existing stable of named varieties that you've got in place? What are the things that you've tried to build on?
Okay, that's a good question, and I've already mentioned one thing, the quality, and we already had a good foundation on that. I just want to make it stellar, you know, and that's where we're at right now, is stellar quality, not just good quality. But also disease resistance. You know, we've had years where we had stripe rust, and I know that's not something we talked about this year, but I'm not saying goodbye to stripe rust. In fact, we did have a pretty good infection of it at one of our locations, that being Chickasha, right in the center of the state. I thought we were looking at stripe rust right down the barrel. I thought it was going to hit us hard. It never came to fruition, probably because of the dry and hot conditions that we had. But I think, you know, year after year, we're going to have to deal with that. So we have put a lot of effort into this program to select for resistance. I mean, a strong and deep level of resistance, not just on the surface that may be good one year, but, you know, next year not so good when the races change. We want good, deep resistance. We've been testing in other places so we can get those kind of looks. That continues to happen no matter what happens in Oklahoma. We continue to do that testing, and I see that now coming through our germplasm. We talked about it today, a couple lines that have really good stripe rust resistance. And we'll talk about those, you know, as we make those announcements in the new varieties.
Right. Any extra weight being given to varieties that I saw one of your slides, you talked 9 out of 10 cattle like this particular variety. Are you weighing a little bit more, you know, some of this either dual grain or the graze out potential in certain years?
Absolutely. The graze and grain moniker that we've used is there. It is the mainstay of our program. Sometimes I forget to talk about it because it's kind of like soil-borne resistance. I forget to talk about it because it's already there. You know, we already have a pretty good foundation. We just want to keep that foundation strong. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned this because I'll talk about this in my next presentation. We have, because of the history we have at Oklahoma State University, 20 years of dedicated breeding for dual-purpose varieties, adaptation to a grazing system where you want forage and grain combined. We have been able to get a trademark on the grazing grain name.
Wow.
So, and we want to now trademark the registered trademark for the logo. And so I'll introduce that in my next talk. So, no, we haven't gotten away from grazing grain. It's just
so
a strong.
This is going to be something you're going to be actually promoting and publicizing in the days to come.
It'll be on every bag of seed. Not to suggest that every variety that we release will be a dual-purpose grazing grain variety. It just doesn't happen that way. Sometimes you see these exceptions come along. You don't want to lose that.
Right.
And quality and stripe-rust resistance, that they occur in a package that is not very good for grazing, we'll think about putting it out there because there will be producers who need that. But again, grazing grain is that foundation.
And you'll be able to clearly identify to those wheat producers which of these varieties really come under that,
right,
under that heading.
Because that name will be on the bag of seed, and there'll be a logo with it. And we'll be using the logo even though it's not trademarked yet.
Finally, you know, when you think about where you're trying to go longer term, I know that a lot of moving parts, the way the ag industry's working, where the other crops primarily have gone to more companies that are really doing the bulk of the work that you're doing in the wheat industry. Where are we going to be able to maintain these breeder programs at land grants?
Boy, that's a good question. I certainly hope so. Personally, I have a lot invested in this program. The university has a lot invested in this program, and I see signs of that investment being continued. You know, we're looking at the possibility of a new research station someday at Stillwater. We desperately need that to continue this kind of work at a level we want to keep, if not even higher. We need the infrastructure. We've worn out the infrastructure we have now, but we'll keep using it as long as we can. I think that investment is there. And it's not just here, Ron. It's not just at Oklahoma State University. I see it in a lot of places, but it's mainly, it seems to be confined to where the wheat states are, the Great Plains, the Pacific Northwest, and some places in the Midwest. Great Plains, I think, is leading the way.
Right.